Welcome to the latest edition of the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast. My name is Ben. I'm the owner of the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery. I'm joined by Amy and Charles, and today we're going to talk about water testing. How's it going, Amy?
It's going pretty good. I actually have some news this week. We talked a little bit last week about my buffalo head cichlids, and I noticed yesterday I found a little baby in there.
Really?
Aww. Yep.
That's very cool.
I only saw one. There's no way of me knowing how many more are in there, or if there are eggs in there, or what's going on, because they're in a deep burrow.
That's very cool. Well done. Yeah. You know, kudos to those guys.
Yeah, right. What they're supposed to do. It's their first brood, so I am pretty proud.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Anyway, that's my news. I don't know if either of you have anything that happened to you that you want to talk about this week.
My Betta unimaculata spawned again.
Awesome. It's still exciting every time, isn't it?
It's still exciting every time.
All right, let's get into it, guys. Sure. Let's see how this topic is going to go. It'll be an interesting one because we all have kind of different perspectives on this great big topic of testing, particularly treating the topic of testing as a general topic when there are so many different tests. Yep. But I think we can loosely categorize it into two different reasons for testing. One would be testing to make sure you don't have too much of something, and one would be testing to make sure you have enough of something, i.e. testing for nitrite versus testing for calcium. So we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about what to test, why to test, and when to test.
And how.
And how to test. There we go. And
yeah.
How to test.
This whole exercise of recording a podcast is interesting because, well, I probably spend more time than the average person thinking through my perspectives on things and my opinions on things because I need to know them to work here. But sitting down and really assessing how I feel about something. And I feel like I actually came down a lot more anti-testing than I was expecting to.
Really?
Like, almost to the point of being anti-testing versus, like, A-testing.
I was talking to Ben about this earlier. I somehow knew that was going to happen.
I knew I was going to be arguing with you about it, so I'm ready for it.
Perfect. Perfect.
And usually that's because I do a lot of testing here. And a lot of that is from the beginner level. And one of the first things you learn to do as a beginner is to test your water to verify that your tank is cycling, the first tank that you set it up. And if you're looking for advice on the internet, as I was doing when I first started getting into aquariums, there is such a following out there for fishless cycling with ammonia. And I hate that method.
It's no fun.
It's no fun. And really, it's so stressful. So that to me is the first reason that I almost came down anti-testing, because I've seen so many beginners flounder with that.
I could not agree more with the natural cycling versus chemical cycling is what I'm going to call it.
It's so boring. It's the worst.
It's so boring, and the people who are doing it at a time where they don't really have the knowledge or experience to properly interpret that test.
Sure.
I've even talked to somebody recently who had been dosing ammonia for 10 weeks. Something like that.
10 weeks?
And said, it kept going down and I kept getting nitrates, but then when I added ammonia again, I would still have ammonia. But it took us a while to get down to it. It was kind of a baffling thing. They actually had, it's either they had dosed ammonia to such a concentration that their tank had no surface area left for beneficial bacteria to colonize, or they dosed ammonia to the point where their pH had dipped down low enough that their beneficial bacteria died off. Because they were cycled, and then they dosed to the point of not being cycled anymore, just because they didn't fully understand why they were doing that.
Yeah. Or the toxicity of the ammonia actually killed their beneficial bacteria.
It could be that too. Yeah. If you're dosing to, it was somewhere between 3 and 6 ppm ammonia every day. It screws up everything in a tank. That's not how that ecosystem works.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So before we go into the topic of testing ammonias and nitrates and nitrates, for some of the beginners out there, so that we all have the exact understanding of what we're talking about when we're talking about cycling an aquarium.
Sure.
We're talking about the growth of good bacteria to process the nitrogen cycle. Nitrogen cycle being the first byproduct of decomposition of ammonia, sources of ammonia are excess fish food, which shouldn't ever be a source of ammonia, fish poop, and then also when fish breathe, the respiration, one of the methods that the oxygen is transported through the membrane of the gill is by the use of, I'm saying that completely wrong, and Charles is going to get all the scientific verbiage correct.
Whatever,
but essentially, right, the act of a fish simply breathing produces a little bit of ammonia. So when we're talking about testing for the nitrogen cycle, or whether a tank has properly cycled, that is testing for the big three, ammonia, nitrite, nitrate. Ammonia testing zero, nitrite testing zero, and nitrate testing low but present. So there, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about cycling. The ammonia cycling, instead of using fish as the addition of ammonia, dosing packaged store ammonia, right?
Yeah.
Kind of sums up where we're...
Yeah.
Where we're, okay.
To me, just adding materials from an established tank. I've never had a cycle fail if I had enough... plants, driftwood, rocks, filter media. If you get any small portion of any of those things you're getting from a tank that's established, you are seeding beneficial bacteria. So from there, if you build up your fish population slowly, you're, at least in tanks I've set up, pretty unlikely to see ammonia from the start.
Yeah,
agreed.
So, gonna talk about a few points that I want to...
Yeah, please go back and correct us on all those half sciences we just made.
Fish respiration does not produce ammonia, but they do exhale ammonia. So a lot of our excess stuff that we exhale is not actually related to us breathing. So fun fact about humans, when you are burning fat, you are actually breathing it out.
Uh-huh.
Because it does get turned into carbon dioxide, but it has nothing to do with respiration that it's happening. It's just... that's how your body gets rid of fat.
That may be the nitpick to end all nitpicks, but I'm really happy you said that because it's really interesting. Yes, that's great. I did not know that.
Almost any aquarium that has fish that you're feeding at some point is going to have ammonia spikes, not because you're excess feeding, though. In a normal tank, you're probably going to see every time you feed a spike of 0.1 ammonia. And that's because fish have extra... their metabolism when they're digesting goes up when they are digesting something, and they are actively producing waste when they are digesting. So it's not because of excess food.
Not always because of excess food.
Yes. So I agree, you should not have an ammonia spike because of excess food because you're doing something wrong, but that doesn't necessarily mean you won't get an ammonia spike.
I stand by my current statement with the keyword being excess.
Yep.
Right. Right. Yeah, and it happens often enough that we can almost say that everybody does it because I have overfed. I overfeed from time to time. Everybody does. It only becomes a consistent issue if you consistently overfeed. One slight overfeeding isn't going to crash your tank. Overfeeding over time will cause your tank to crash.
Well, that and one thing to keep in mind is that for most species of fish, ammonia is toxic at levels as low as 0.2 parts per million.
Right.
0.2.
Hmm?
Yeah. So. And a lot of test strips or even some test kits will list safe ammonia up to 0.5.
Simply listing safe ammonia. That's one of my problems with test kits, right?
Yes.
Simply saying you have a safe level of ammonia. Okay, so maybe you have a level of ammonia that may or may not be harmful to life. But if you're detecting ammonia in an aquarium, something's wrong.
There's a safe level of lead in this drinking water. I don't want you to be...
Yeah, right? You just assume that it's okay rather than saying, okay, where did it come from and why is it here?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and that's another thing that beginner testing, you wouldn't know that. You wouldn't necessarily know that if what you're reading is on the package of the product that you're using. So... to me, a test is all in the interpretation. That's the only way that it's valuable is if it's interpreted correctly. And it takes experience to know how to interpret it or to know people who are experienced who can help you with that when you're first starting out.
But I would also argue that testing when you're a beginner is more critical.
Absolutely.
Because you need to... like my display tank, I rarely... test at home because based on my plants, I know what is happening in that tank because I've built that experience with that system specifically.
Right.
For if this starts happening, then this is the cause of it. But I have experience not just with systems, with that specific system, because each tank is going to be different on what its equilibrium is.
Yeah. I'd rather be chasing stability than be chasing a number.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I'll be the first to say that I haven't tested any of my tanks at home in a year, and that includes my 1 gallon saltwater tank. I'm willing to accept the things that come with that, which is usually in a stable tank, nitrates creep up a little bit. You're going to get a little bit of algae. That's how I know, oh, shoot, I need to do a water change. When you work with a display, just like you were saying, you really get tuned into what that means. So I wouldn't recommend that people who are just starting out don't get their water tested at all. I would just rather people who are setting up a tank plan around bringing their samples into trusted fish stores or a trusted friend who's been through it before, who knows what to look for, who knows what to panic about and what not to panic about. Yeah.
I think that's well said.
I would argue that if you are doing specific things with your system, if you're dosing at all, anything, mm-hmm. you should be testing.
Yeah.
If you are like raising fish, my fry tanks, when I have fry, they're getting tested every Thursday because I need to know if I need to do a second water change that week.
Because what if you get a pneumonia spike on Friday?
Yeah.
Maybe you should be testing every day instead.
It's possible. But my water change schedule is every Sunday for those breeding systems.
Okay.
So Thursday is halfway until the next close enough.
Okay.
Those are heavily fed systems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I need to know if I need to back it up a little bit better.
Probably the central point to all of this is keep the aquarium you want to maintain. True. Don't keep the aquarium that you saw somebody else maintain and you think it looks cool. If you don't want to do that, then don't do that. I have no desire to keep breeding tanks at home.
Yeah.
I want heavily planted tanks with few fish so that I don't have to test. So that I don't, if I decide I don't want to do a water change for 3 weeks, I know that that's not going to hurt my tank because I'm running at wide enough margins that I can let myself be a little bit lazy.
I like that. I think that's something that many, many hobbyists don't accept. They don't try and keep a tank. You said it already. You said it just right. They try and do too much too soon with too little. And that's the biggest challenge of anybody that tries to do saltwater the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And many freshwater hobbyists trying to keep an aquarium outside of what they're willing to really willing to put into it.
Well, that, and I would argue that, and this is going to be me flipping a little bit.
Uh-oh.
I would argue that too many people, and I guess for someone like me, too many can mean as many as if there's one person doing that. That's too many, but... There is a significant portion of the hobbyist community that, Amy's right, do chase numbers,
mm-hmm.
especially in situations where they don't need to be doing that at all.
Yeah.
My most common situation where that'll pop up where I'm like, okay, that is way too much effort,
yeah.
is anyone who is keeping shrimp, like Neocardinias, and is trying to have a low pH system to do it. Because they're like, oh, every forum says it needs to be at like 6.5. And we're in our area, in case this is your first time listening, somewhere around like 7.6 to like 7.8 is basically our norm here. There is no need to be doing that with those shrimp. Like, we keep and breed them in tap water with zero problems.
I think that's a classic example of chasing pH that people run into problems with, and consistency with pH. When it comes to pH, is so much more important than precision.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I'll tell people with a lot of things, pH is always the last thing I worry about.
Yes.
I'm worried about ammonia, I'm worried about nitrites, and I'm worried about, in some cases, because I'm working with some blackwater fish, my TDS, my total dissolved solutes. Don't really care about my pH, though. Because if you're taking care of everything else, pH doesn't really matter that much. There's exceptions, but
It's less likely to be a problem. The only reason I had to interject is because you brought up breeding blackwater fish. And with those, the pH is going to matter.
Not necessarily for keeping, but definitely necessarily for breeding. For some of them. For most of them, I should say. pH is less of a factor for keeping than it is for breeding.
If you're focusing on something that's black water, if you're right. trying to keep it as a black water organism.
I will argue, there isn't as much scientific evidence, though, as you'd think, that low pH is the critical water parameter. That seems to be something that hobbyists have picked up from a few species that's true. I'm finding more and more new research that it's bacterial loads, which are lower in acidic conditions.
Considerably.
So with something like me and Amy have argued this a lot with the Betta albimarginata, I don't think pH matters for them. What I think matters is how clean is the water.
That's a Betta albimarginata was a great one to bring up because one of the fascinating, like, epiphanal things that I learned about pH and the nitrogen cycle, the nitrifying bacteria can't survive at a pH, I believe it's below 6.2. Maybe it's 6.
I think it's 6.
Somewhere in the neighborhood.
So nitrifying bacteria can't survive. So how do you cycle a tank with fish that you have to... So licorice gouramis and some opistos, some of those fish that really do well at a pH of 5.5, how on earth do they survive in all that ammonia? Well, guess what? Ammonia is not toxic at a pH below 6.
Because it's ionized to be ammonium, which is non-toxic to fish.
I thought that was very cool little factoid of how that works, that pH and ammonia, how that works together. I thought that was very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so when we're talking about all of these things, two methods of testing and the debate we get criticized around here for sometimes, dip and reads versus titration versus liquid tests.
I'll be the first to say it. I love dip and reads.
Absolutely. I'm such a fan. And sometimes we take some heat for those things are just not accurate. How can blah, 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 blah. When you're measuring nitrites and nitrates, you don't care if it's 23 or 27 or 22. You care whether it's low, medium, or high, whether it's present or not. When it comes to nitrite, you want 0 or something is really all you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
If there's nitrite present, something's wrong. And the dip and reads are so easy and so quick. You're not counting drops. You're not making sure something's to the line.
Right.
You stick it in the tank. You swirl around it. Take a peek at it and see how you're doing.
Yeah, the way I like to put it is they are accurate. They're just not precise. So you know that you definitely have 20 to 30. You might not know if you have 26. And you don't need to.
Yeah, who cares?
For nitrite, yeah, it's either yes or no.
Right.
And the other stuff that normally come on a dip strip, it's really just to let you know if something is, if it is the way it's supposed to be or if it's not the way it's supposed to be. That's all you need to know.
Yeah. I would argue with that, with ammonia, which isn't on the like 5-in-1 test strip. You really need a precise reading on that because like 0.1 makes a big difference.
Yeah, and we've had the ammonia dip strips and they start at 0.5.
Yeah.
they make a difference, but do you really need to know?
Yes.
And why? Why do you need to know whether you have 0.1 or 0.5?
Because you need to know whether you're having a normal ammonia spike in the daily cycle of your tank or if you have a spike that's a problem. In any tank, you are going to have daily spikes, just like a 0.1 to like 0.12, just because of your fish existing and eating and living and breathing. But if you're getting higher than that, that means something is wrong.
I've never had a positive ammonia test on a healthy aquarium.
But have you measured with something that has a greater accuracy than plus or minus 0.2? Even the liquid test, I think the first actual measurable amount is 0.25.
How about them apples, Charles? Yeah. What do you do with that information?
But I would want to know at a minimum of 0.25. I think that's
the
level
point
I'm
where
comfortable
I start
with.
Worrying. But if my cutoff point is 0.5 or 0.25, I'm going 0.25 because that's when I start worrying. Not
if
at 0.5.
If I get measurable ammonia in an aquarium,
yeah,
I start looking for uneaten food or something that died.
We're sort of splitting hairs in this discussion because the only reason you test ammonia is if something else is wrong. Either it's a new tank or you're seeing something wrong in a more comprehensive test, like a dip strip. Usually the only reason we test ammonia on like just a cold water, I'm saying cold, not as in temperature, cold as in not knowing anything about it, water test.
Sure.
The only reason we would test ammonia is if we saw no nitrites and no nitrates. Because if you have no nitrites and you have some nitrates, then the logic follows that you have no ammonia because the nitrogen cycle is working.
So, step three is there. That means step one and two are as well.
Right.
Yep.
So we are splitting hairs a little bit because we don't test ammonia that often unless we know that we need to.
But that's why I'm willing to split hairs on it, because I'm testing. If I've gotten to the point where I feel like I need to invest in splitting hairs and testing ammonia, that means I'm really confused what's happening.
That ammonia is rarely an issue in an established tank unless something has gone horribly wrong. Like you washed your filter media or your kid dumped a can of fish food in the tank. Measurable dangerous ammonia is actually fairly rare unless you work in a place like this where you're testing 10 people's water every day.
Right. And a lot of them are new people. And let's face it, this is the Midwest. If there's a problem, you throw food at it.
Yeah. Just keep feeding and eventually they'll be happy as they're floating upside down with swollen bellies.
We all grew up with, Mom, I'm not happy. Have a sandwich. Yeah. The fish don't look good. What should we do? Throw some food in. No, do not do that.
Yeah. But nitrate is another controversial subject because I've also gotten in arguments with people who will tell me that there's no reason that you need measurable nitrate in a tank. And personally, if I don't see nitrate in my tank, that's a big issue. My plants are dying. Yeah.
There's something wrong.
That, and I feel like the only type of, and I'm not very knowledgeable in this specific type of coral environment, but I feel like the only type of aquarium I can think of where I'm like, you want 000 is SPS corals. Just because.
No.
Really?
No. You want very, very low nitrate as opposed to just low nitrate, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But 0.5, I need to look at a test kit to get the 0.5 or the 1 or the point whatever.
Well, it doesn't matter. It just needs to be slightly more than the corals are using so that you know that there's enough available for the corals to use.
Yeah,
but corals will starve as well if there's no nitrate.
Well, yeah, and that's what the point I'm getting to. Like things like our bubble coral or zanias or Kenya trees. You can tell they get mad when we keep the tanks
too
clean.
If I do too many water changes in that tank, that bubble coral will let me know.
Oh, yeah.
And a big part of that is those soft corals actually come from lagoon environments where they're usually getting rivering watershed wash off.
Editor's note, we do know a bubble coral is not a soft coral.
Yeah.
We know it's an LPS.
Let's say corals with soft tissues as contrast to your point about SPS, which you do. Especially for a lot of those like acro tanks that people are wanting to keep where it's like super vibrant colors. They're keeping ultra low nutrient, ultra high feeding, high maintenance tanks. And that is like an upper level of aquarium obsession that I certainly am not at. I don't need to have my hands in my tank every single day for an hour. That's an exaggeration.
I was like, would, but not for an invert, no.
That's a perfect segue into talking about, okay, testing for the things you don't want, and how about testing for the things that you do want? So, for the record here, I test very, very rarely. My tank at home is a low-tech planet aquarium. It's been set up for 16 years, 12 years, I don't know, many, many, many years. Around the store, I don't need to do a lot of testing for things we don't need because if I walk up to a tank and I see that it's got cyanobacteria growing in the tank, I know the phosphates are out of control or at least a little higher than we want them to be. And my service techs all know that if they walk up to a tank and they see red slime growing in the tank, they know, oh crap, I didn't change the phosphate media soon enough, or I need to hit it with red slime remover to kill the cyanobacteria so that I can treat it with phosphate remover to get the phosphates out. We just don't need to test it in that situation because experience has taught us to look at the tank and see what's going on. The high-end SPS tanks that people are keeping, it's very difficult to look at an SPS tank and say, the calcium's starting to drop a little bit.
Right. But you can say the nitrates and phosphates are a little high. You're right. It's so much easier to visualize too much than not enough. Because not enough, most cases, just means not growing that well.
Unless, of course, we're talking about acroporas. Acroporas, if the calcium gets too low, they die. Although acroporas will die if Jupiter and Saturn are properly aligned.
Yeah, I said a mean thing about an acropora one time, and it just, like, keeled over that day.
We do have some fantastic SBS tanks out there, but man, sometimes those singers are so temperamental. And it's because they live in an environment that is so extremely stable. And that's where testing becomes super important. And accuracy and precision both become really important.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
testing out an SPS tank, maybe here's a summary, not a roundup, because we're definitely not done with this discussion. But here's a summary. The more high tech an aquarium is, the more important testing is.
Mm-hmm.
The lower the tech, the less necessary the testing is.
Mm-hmm.
Ergo, the higher the tech the aquarium is, the more important accuracy and precision are. The lower tech, the less important those things are.
True.
So we do want to know, and maybe there's one of those things where with nitrate, we have to even say, darn it, they're right. We do care that it is actually at 0.5. On a high-end SBS tank, that's going to mean the difference in color between really good blue and not so really good blue on a blue acropora coral. So,
depending on how much you care about that one half shade of blueness,
yeah.
or two shades of blueness, let's say.
If you're
which I probably wouldn't.
Yeah. I mean, if you're investing in the SBS system, you care.
Right, right. But again, back to keep the tank that you want to
maintain.
Keep
the tank that you want to maintain. Yep.
But yeah. I would argue that, like, getting back into if you're dosing anything, whether it's some sort of reactor or some sort of liquid something, you should be testing.
Well,
for saltwater, I think that's more the case. For
I
freshwater,
don't think it's necessary.
No,
I don't.
We test even in that display tank downstairs, just because it's hard to keep the calcium up, even in that tank, even though we don't really have
That's
any...
because we have a 16-year-old bubble coral in that tank. That's extremely important.
Yeah.
If you're keeping a mixed reef, soft coral dominant, something like, and this is kind of why I'm a big fan of the Aquavitro line from SeaChem. They have a beginner's dosing schedule, a medium dosing schedule, and a high-tech dosing schedule. Where if you are keeping a mixed reef and you've got some of the easier LPS corals and mostly soft corals, it's good to get some calcium in that tank. You don't have to be really accurate with how much you're putting in. We can put, let's put 2 capfuls a week in there. We're not going to do any harm by putting in 2 capfuls a week with a frog spawn and some of the fungias and some of those corals. They'll be just fine. They will benefit from the amount of calcium that's going in. And they won't suffer because we don't know exactly how much that is.
Yeah, and those are corals that if they do go slightly deficient for a week or so, that's going to be where you just see decreased growth versus dying off.
They're
so
fine. And there's nothing wrong with not testing that tank.
Yeah, and more tanks are in that middle ground than in the you definitely need to test ground. But if you've got a lot of money in it, I can definitely see where you would want to verify that investment is still going okay.
Yeah, and that's where I'm stuck on, because I'm like, I would rather have more information than less. I consider water testing to be a redundancy,
mm-hmm.
where it's me double checking my math to make sure that I can help remove operator error in this situation. So I will admit, maybe it's not critical, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I get it.
That's fair, but that's important to say too. Just that for you, knowing that things are going well for sure reduces the stress that you have over it. Right. To me, if I were to go in and track the fluctuation of my nitrates or the fluctuation of any number of things in my tank, that probably would just cause me more stress. To me, having more information makes me less able to care for my tank than if I were to just establish what my maintenance needs to be based on testing initially how much my levels increase. I know I need to do a water change once a month or once every 2 weeks if I want the algae to go down. And that's really all I need to know in a planted tank that's designed to be a display.
I think that's one of the great things about this hobby, that there are so many reasons that people have for keeping tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there are people out there that they keep their aquarium because of all the cool, fun, techie stuff they get to do to keep things alive. And they can keep some amazing tanks because they love to do all those techie things. There are other people that I just want my tank to be pretty and easy.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it without testing, a little testing at the beginning to get that knowledge. But you can do that too.
I don't think that most people think that there is a tank that you can do where you don't have to test, where you don't have to dose, and it will be full of organisms and look beautiful. That tank exists. It's at Ben's house.
I guess that's just
maybe it's at my house a little bit too.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess that's one of the like funny things about how I look at it, because I keep fairly low-tech tanks, but I act like someone who keeps high-tech tanks. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I don't want that maintenance. I don't like reactors and stuff like that. But I definitely act like someone who does.
I'll argue that breeder tanks are probably the exception to the rule, where they're not high tech, but they are high effort. You know,
they're more effort.
Yeah, I should say more effort than your average planted community tank.
See, I would disagree. I think anyone who wants to breed can breed. It's fairly easy. It's just that someone like me likes to keep track of those numbers.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Because it gives me... I like to be preemptive, not reactive. And there's nothing wrong with being reactive, because with things like fish and most plants and most corals, they're very forgiving.
Oh, yeah.
And communicative.
Like, yes. They will let you know with plenty of time with most species.
Right.
I just would prefer, for me personally, not to get to that point, because I know if I let myself be reactive, I will miss things, because then I'm not being attentive personally to my systems.
Right.
So funny that you would say that, because I would specifically describe myself and have as a reactive aquarist. I see yellowed leaves, I toss in some potassium. I want some more growth, I throw in some iron to encourage some new growth, and that's enough for me. I don't need any more than that.
Being proactive in my fish keeping keeps me accountable to myself and to the fish.
Sure.
I do weekly water changes. The only reason I do that is because if I do it every other week, I will sometimes forget, wait, is this the week? Is that like, and then
it'll be 4 weeks all of a sudden.
Yeah, and then it'll be 4 weeks all of a sudden. Whereas if I do it weekly, I'm consistent and I can just say, it's Sunday. It's time to do water change. That's how I keep myself.
Yeah, I have no idea how frequent my water changes are.
Yeah, see, then I would get into, wait, it's Sunday, it's water change day. Did I skip it last Sunday? I don't remember, so I don't know if I can skip it this Sunday.
Yeah, no, that's why.
I probably can.
That's why my scheduling with stuff like that works the way it does, because it keeps me in a rhythm that I can remember where I'm at.
Sure.
Okay, so I have an idea. I want to do some we're going to just throw some stuff out there and kind of summarize. We've talked a lot about why test and whether or not to test and when to test. Let's throw some ideas out there and what to test for and why, when, and how. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And some of it will be like, let's summarize what we've talked about already and let's maybe throw some new stuff out there. Okay, so ammonia. What's the bottom line on ammonia? Why do you test for ammonia?
New tank is the big thing.
If it's a new tank or you're testing for nitrates and nitrites and you're like, still doesn't make sense.
Right. Testing for nitrites and nitrates. What do you think?
To me, it's just to establish a routine for when to do your maintenance. So if you are consistently measuring 20 or below nitrates, you don't need to test it and you know your maintenance is appropriate.
On a freshwater tank.
On a freshwater tank. Yes, I should say that. Mm-hmm. And usually that's what I'm going to be talking about, but as long as, to me, testing nitrites and nitrates, verify the nitrogen cycle and make sure that the maintenance you're doing is enough and that there's nothing else going into the tank that shouldn't be like excess food, too many fish, whatever.
Perfect. I agree. pH.
Almost never, unless you're messing with something.
Okay. So when would you mess with something and why would you need to test pH as a result of it?
The only tank I test pH in is my licorice growing tank. Because that is a species that requires a low pH acidic environment in order to spawn in. I am trying to spawn them. I have them sitting at 5.5. Since I'm modifying the water every time I'm putting water in, because my natural tap water is not 5.5, I'm testing every time I'm putting water.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Exactly. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Those fish that require low pH to breed or to raise the fry, notice there was an interjection there. We're going to get to that into a later podcast at some point. There's one of the situations where testing becomes very important with pH. We live in West Michigan. We have liquid rock here. What liquid rock really means for us is a very stable pH. We touched on that a little bit. But the liquid rock means we have a high alkalinity. Alkalinity, one of the loose definitions, is its ability to maintain pH. And why not test pH here? Because consistency is more important than accuracy most of the time. So keeping that constant and stable pH is more important.
I will say that I generally, if I'm doing a dip and read, like a 5-in-1 or something like that, I will glance at pH. If pH is vastly different than what it should be here, that can be a sign of several things that could go wrong in a tank.
Somebody thinking they need to use spring water.
Yes. Okay. Or your ammonia spiked and your pH lowered a little bit or something like that. It usually means something happened that shouldn't, or you're doing something you shouldn't.
Excellent.
If your pH is different than what it's supposed to be.
Yep. Getting back to, I want to comment on the, so we have a high alkalinity here. Most of that is carbonate. That's a buffer that produces a stable condition. In my display tanks, I don't mess with that water because it's stable.
Stable.
As is. In my low pH system, pH can kind of fluctuate a little bit just because there aren't buffers in it. I have to deal with the fact that it's going to fluctuate because it's a low pH environment and that's just what they do. But for the average person trying to keep like shrimp or something, that is not a good thing.
Yeah, worth it. That's probably a good transition to alkalinity, not to take over your section,
no,
but will you science brains please explain what alkalinity is, what it does, and why we need it, I guess.
All right, so I'm going to give the basic, the layman's understanding of alkalinity. And I like to use baking soda as the example for understanding alkalinity. And baking soda has what's called a KPH of 7.8. KPH meaning potential pH, or the maximum pH you can get with baking soda, right? So if you take a glass of water and you put in enough baking soda to get it to 7.8 pH, it will stay there. You can add 10 more tablespoons of baking soda and you won't get the pH any higher than 7.8, okay? So now let's take two glasses of water, and one of those we're gonna add just enough baking soda to get it to 7.8, and then we're gonna stop adding. The other glass of water, we're gonna add as much baking soda as we can possibly dissolve in there without getting any of it to settle in the bottom, which will be considerably more than we could put in the other one, okay? So now there's much more baking soda dissolved in the other glass, but it still has a pH of 7.8. Now, we're gonna mess with it. We're gonna start putting in drops of vinegar. The drops of vinegar would lower the pH. In the glass that only has enough baking soda to get it to 7.8, it's not going to take very many drops of vinegar to start to get that pH to drop. In the glass that has a whole bunch of baking soda in it, it will take a lot more vinegar to get the pH to drop. So loosely defined, and it has to do with hydroxide ions and all of those. There's enough of those things floating around to go bond with other things that make it so it does this thing or the other thing, right? And that's
a bunch of magic happens.
Magic happens, yeah. And I remember learning that chemistry in chemistry class while I was trying to stay awake. But that's how you have a stable pH, by having an alkalinity that can help keep it stable.
I think that description was a lot more sciencey than I think you think it was. But
it's at least a functional use for it. And I feel like I understand it about as well as I probably did when my 10th grade science teacher explained it to me.
And that's why I say the high alkalinity conditions we have around here, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Stable.
Things like ammonia, fish waste, etc., those are all acidic.
Yes.
Having a high alkalinity prevents those from changing things. That's why my low pH tank, it can fluctuate. There's nothing there preventing when I feed or when they're doing fishy things from changing it.
I think we could even classify a low pH tank as a little more of a techie tank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really all about what extra you put into it, if that makes sense. Like anything you do to alter the way that the aquarium would be if you just filled it with water.
Yep. Yeah. You want to know what you're altering.
And I will say, if it does get to that, on the question of the how do we test, dip and reads aren't going to get you a very accurate reading of pH. Because for that, it really is, you do want to get it pretty precise. I don't even really like the liquid tests for it. If you're going to be altering pH, it's worth it to invest in a digital meter.
Absolutely.
I don't know how Charles tests it at home.
I am going to have to invest in a digital meter because my tannins have reached a point in that tank high enough where testing is now a problem because now the color is wrong. I have done it long enough that I know more or less what the shades are now.
You're talking about the way that your water is stained, you can estimate the pH by?
Is but also, like,
okay, that's not something I'd recommend anyone else doing.
No, I can do that, but also on the flip side, I have had to do it long enough where even if I test it, the shades won't be right because the water doesn't start off clear. It starts off brown.
Oh, so it stains the actual coloration of the test you're doing.
So I have to have a very high light condition. So I have this lamp for it so that I can actually see the color beyond the brown.
You need a pH pen.
Yeah,
that's actually hilarious.
Yep.
I love it. Yep. I love it.
So,
can you see the fish? They're licorice gouramis, so you can probably really see the fish.
Only when they want me to, but yes. That's the fun thing about them, being in black water. They can angle themselves when they want to be seen and be iridescent or not.
That's super cool. Okay, so there's the basic tests. Now, in a tech planted or in a saltwater tank, let's go tech planted, testing phosphates.
Never done a freshwater phosphate test.
I have, but only because specific type of algaes will grow if you have phosphates.
Your desirable algaes that you want, you mean? Or ones that you don't like?
Ones we don't like. But also, I came from an area that was fairly rural.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to know what was in our well water before I put it in my tank, to know whether we had agricultural runoff in my tank before I put it in my tank.
That's another reason to test for ammonia, too.
That's a useful thing to know.
Yes. So what were you going to say about phosphates in a planted tank? Because I'm actually curious. I have no idea what you're going to say.
So phosphates in a planted tank are just like phosphates in a SPS tank. You need a certain level if your goal is to grow some of those super techy plants. In West Michigan, it's not as big of a deal because we have phosphates naturally in our tap water, and that probably will keep the phosphates where we need them to be. But if we're growing some of the ureocolums or some of the other soft water, low TDS water plants where we have to use RO water to get the pH and alkalinity or hardness way down. So we'll go make it easier. Soft water, low pH plants, where we're not necessarily using tap water that has some phosphates in it, we may need to be dosing and measuring some phosphates for those plants.
That's a good point. And it's not something you'd usually think about when you're talking about remineralizing RO water or something like that.
Right.
And there are supplements for that. There and for nitrogen too.
Yep.
Nitrate.
Yep.
That nitrogen additive that we got sat on our shelf for a long time because we have nitrate and phosphate in our tap water.
Right. In West Michigan here, when we're doing most of the dosing, you brought up potassium. That's probably the only of the NPK, nitrogen, phosphate, potassium. Of those, the potassium is probably the only one that we'll actually ever need to dose here in West Michigan in a normal tank where we're not using RO water. Enough disclaimers? Okay, I covered that. All right, so when we move over to the saltwater side, calcium, magnesium, alkalinity, and pH. And the four of those have this crazy relationship where they all hang out and they all do stuff together. And sometimes they like to hang out together and sometimes they get mad at each other, but they all have an effect on each other.
And they're really mean when they're together. Sometimes they make me cry.
We call that a precipitate.
That is... I feel like that's something that you should have to be doing titration tests with.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, you need to be very precise with those.
The odds that you're going to have in your liquid test kit some sort of something coming out of solution that you need to make sure you shake back in or whatever, when you want precision in the way that you do in those saltwater tanks, a titration test isn't that much harder to use. It isn't that much more expensive when you're talking about the number of tests that you're doing, so...
It's the only way calcium and magnesium work. You can't do a calcium or magnesium test without titration.
I'm not sure. I've never even used... I know that there is liquid test, like supposedly for reefs that get into some of that stuff, but I actually don't know. No, like there's an API master kit, but I don't know what's in it.
But it's still a titration test. You're still getting a certain color and then dripping in drops to get that color to change to a different color.
Oh, okay. I've never used it. I just assumed it worked the same as fresh water.
Yeah, I've never used this because I always use the Red Sea one. Yes.
I didn't because I didn't think it would work.
But it wouldn't the same. Yeah. I think the Red Sea ones do it better.
Okay.
They just are, they're more accurate. They're more easy to use. You're instead of counting drops, you're putting in a measured amount. And that's just the thing that Red Sea did well.
And I do feel the need to say, though, because I have run into this several times. If you're doing one of these titration test kits, you can't rush it.
Yeah.
Like, I've had people come in and be like, what's wrong with my tank? My calcium is at, like, 450. I don't know what's wrong with it. And then I tested it, and he was at, like, 360. And I was like, So I had to go back to him and be like, walk through what he did. And what it was, he was doing it too fast, so like each drop didn't have time to dissolve out without changing color, so he went too far.
Nice. Yep.
No, take your time with them
and read the instructions every time
and follow them,
because I've done the same thing.
Yep.
I'm saying,
why can't I get a reading on this? What, it the calcium's like 600? That's impossible.
Slow down. I have done hundreds, if not thousands, of titration tests, and everyone here can say confidently that when they see me do them, I have that Red Sea instruction thing on the table in front of me, and I'm reading it as
two,
I'm doing it.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. No.
I don't care how many times you've done that test, have the instructions in front of you.
Yeah.
Count those out.
That's so
Count
funny.
Count those out.
So I do actually have one more point to make on at least the topic of nitrate and phosphate. We talked about having nitrate and phosphate in our tap water, and this is mainly the reason why we recommend, if you're doing a saltwater tank, only use reverse osmosis water. One of the many reasons we say that, but that is a pretty important one, because I can tell when I test your water, even if I use a dip strip, whether you're using tap water or not.
That is very true.
And usually I can tell from the first time you come in and say, hey, I have a crazy algae problem. It's ridiculous. I have one fish. Probably you're using tap water. Because that nitrate and phosphate level builds over time. And eventually, the algae loves it so much that it just takes over. So that needs to be said. If we've told you that, we don't care about selling you 25 cents of RO water. We care about you having a tank that you want.
That's well said. It's always frustrating when I hear somebody online, or I hear somebody in the store, or I see somebody talk about, I've been using tap water forever, and my tank looks fantastic. I've had it set up for longer than 6 months.
6 months.
Right. We here do not measure success in months. We measure it in years.
Yeah. How long have the ocean's reefs been set up?
Yeah. No, Amy, that's an excellent point, and one that should not go unmentioned. So we were talking about the relationship between calcium, magnesium, pH, and alkalinity. All four of those things have such a close relationship. One person described to me one time that I thought was pretty interesting, that if you're dosing calcium and not dosing magnesium, you're wasting a bunch of calcium. So when calcium bonds with carbonates, it forms a precipitant. That precipitant is useless to corals once it's formed. Calcium carbonate is what the skeleton of a coral is made of. It's what all of the sand in a reef tank is. It's all calcium carbonate. And calcium forms a really, really stable bond with carbonate. Calcium forms a fairly weak bond with magnesium. So if your magnesium levels are fine in the aquarium, the carbonate will bond with the magnesium and leave the calcium for the corals.
The way it was described to me is if you're adding calcium and it becomes carbonate, you've basically given someone pre-cut wood to the size they can't use anymore.
I like it. I think that goes down to a lot of the all-in-one additives that say it maintains calcium and pH. I don't think that's possible. I want to hear some of the evidence on that. Hopefully somebody out there will, you know,
I've had somebody who was trying to sell us one of those products. They insisted that they had a product that could dose both, I think in this case it was calcium and alkalinity together.
I don't think that's possible.
Based on the science that's been explained to me, based on the explanations I've read, It didn't make any sense to me, but I've heard people insist that their products can do that. Personally, I'd rather just do it the right way.
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, this is really more a topic of testing than dosing, but going right along with that, when we dose an aquarium with calcium, magnesium, and some kind of a pH or alkalinity additive, we always wait about 20 minutes or at least dose them in different parts of the tank, just so that the alkalinity and the magnesium and the calcium can't bond with each other right away. At least give them a little bit of time.
And I think best practice is to give it a couple of days, right?
That's best, but that's not always practical.
Right, I had to learn that the hard way, though. That this is there's an actual story here, and I don't think Amy has heard this one, but when I first started dosing the reef tank downstairs, I had not been told that story about, and I just didn't think of it. Like, I knew of it cognitively, but I didn't think about it, like,
practically.
And so I just dosed everything at once, and then we come in the next day and there's this white haze in the tank. And Ben looks me dead in the eye and goes, "So did you dose everything at once?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's exactly what I did." And he goes, "Well, you made calcium carbonate. That's what you did."
My favorite thing testing, honestly, is because it makes you feel like such a wizard or something, is when you know exactly what went wrong the second you tested, and you're like, this is what happened, and somebody looks at you and they're like, what? This is exactly what happened. And you don't need to be that like much of a genius to do that. You don't need to, you just need to have that base level knowledge of those few different things. And to somebody who doesn't have that knowledge, you look like you're some sort of crazy scientist.
It's basically, it's just because you had to do it wrong sometimes. And so then you know how somebody else did it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. And usually if I'm telling you you did something wrong in a tank, it's because I've also done that same exact thing.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, you can't expect yourself to know everything in this hobby. Like, oh, I breed fish. Didn't stop to think, oh, well, I'm going to make calcium carbonate if I dose this all at once in a coral tank.
Why would you even have that thought unless somebody explained it to you?
Yeah, it's like, it's okay to make mistakes. Just learn from them.
That's the best part.
And I think that's very important to bring up in this topic, because a lot of people look at their testing and they're just like, oh, I'm just so bad. I'm so terrible. And I see that a lot when I'm testing for other people. They just feel bad. And I'm like, you shouldn't. Like, you're learning, like, I'm still learning.
You shouldn't feel bad because you overfed your fish. Everyone has. Now you know. And that's an easy fix. To get an easy fix is such a gift. The ones that haunt us are the ones where we never learned. We never knew what happened. Something just died and we never heard an explanation for it. For it to be a simple explanation, oh, somebody washed their filter media and had an ammonia spike. Perfect. Don't do that again. You won't have that problem again.
Or feed less.
Or continue to feed less while you're thinking about feeding less.
And I just think that's important to bring up in this topic. Because we've all made mistakes.
We've all done.
Awesome.
So there we have it. We have a whole bunch of things we test for. It kind of turned into a discussion about
You can't talk about maintenance and testing separately.
That's true.
You can't talk about testing without talking about maintenance. It goes hand in hand. Testing is how you prove what you already suspect or how you find a direction to investigate.
I like that. Well said. Very good. So what do you guys test for? What did we miss? What do you think we said wrong? Did you learn anything from this?
Yeah, be sure to look up Watercolors Aquarium Gallery on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're working on getting some YouTube videos coming at you. So just follow our social media and we'll get you some more information that way. Let us know if there's anything else that you want to hear, that you want us to talk about, or if you have questions, please always send them to us. Email, Facebook, however you can find us.
Thanks. Have a great day.